And welcome back to the Armband. I'm Matt Ferreira.
And I'm Ezra. And today we are in day 394 of the lockout. Nothing is happening. Everybody is mad at each other. And we just want baseball back. Now there's still a pretty decent amount of stuff to talk about today. We've got some lockout updates, some retirements, some new video game news, but we're just going to start out with the lockout updates because everybody wants to hear about them. According to Ken Rosenthal, this came out 4 days ago. So this was on Tuesday, that the new CBA is not closed. And I think we're all not really surprised by that. Neither side seems to really be making any headway with the other. I know that recently it came out that the MLB is requesting the assistance of a federal mediator to help in resolving the lockout situation. It's just starting to get so tedious at this point. We want baseball back. They're threatening to delay spring training. And I just want to see dudes from the Dominican Republic hit bombs over fences. Like, I'm just losing it a little bit at this point.
Yeah, so some updates going right into it. The MLBPA announced on Friday that they are rejecting the league's request to involve federal mediation and bargaining, and expected decision of the players 1 day after MLB formally proposed the process. They released a statement saying that 2 months after implementing their lockout and just 2 days after committing to players that a counter proposal would be made, the owners refused to make a counter, instead requested mediation. The clearest path to a fair and timely agreement is to get back to the table. Players stand ready to negotiate. So on the MLBPA statement, they gave a proposal to the MLB on Tuesday. The MLB said that they would counter these proposals before Thursday, saying they would not, which is like questionable on why they wouldn't. Max Scherzer came to Twitter, which is very rare considering he hasn't tweeted since September of last year. And he sent two tweets out that said, "We don't need mediation because what we are offering to MLB is fair for both sides. We want a system where threshold and penalties don't function as caps, allows younger players to realize more of their market value, makes service time manipulation a thing of the past, and eliminating tanking as winning strategy." So there's a lot to digest there. I mean, seeing star players like this come out to help defend younger guys is always fun to see. I mean, even like looking at these tweets right now, all the numbers are still going up, even though they're tweeted just over an hour ago. It's interesting to see how this is went from going so positive so fast to so negative.
Yeah, we're all just seeing the duality here. There's one side that really wants desperately to get it done. That's the MLBPA. They want their guys. They want the players to be able to make their money. It's plain and simple. And the owners could really care less at this point. They don't really need the They're obviously losing a little bit of money, but they're not losing nearly as much and as important of money as the players are. And it's really coming as no surprise to most of us that there is growing issue between them all. According to Passan on Twitter, he said that there was little progress made in the Wednesday meetings, and that the start of spring training is in grave danger, and it would take a miraculous deal coming together to rescue it. He said a delay feels inevitable, and it seems like we beat this down everybody's throat every week on the podcast, just saying the lockout's not over yet. The lockout's not over yet. It's getting worse. It's getting worse. And we're getting sick of it. We just want to move on. We want to see guys on the field enjoying the game again. And I think see the fans in the stands just cheering, eating hot dogs and relaxing after a lot of tumult here.
Yeah, delay is definitely inevitable. Pitchers and catchers would normally report in like a week or two from this point in February. And it seems like I believe it was a tweet, maybe an article, that they haven't even started negotiating big ticket issues yet. It's so far just been the smaller stuff, and MLB still hasn't even started negotiating with them, it sounds like, according to like Alex Wood, who's done a few tweets, Mitch Garver's tweeted a little bit. So it seems like MLB's not even willing to negotiate right now, and they're trying to drag it out.
Yeah, and so because of that, we're not going to drag this out. We're just going to move right along to a little bit of news in baseball. Pretty small news, honestly. The last active player drafted by the Expos retired. His name was Tom Brady. You know, he didn't really do very much in baseball, so there's not too much to talk about here, but he did. He was the last active player drafted by the Expos, so the end of the Expos era in totality here. So Tom Brady, whoever you are, I don't really know, but, you know, congratulations on finally retiring, and go Expos.
Yeah, big shout out to Tom Brady. I could go into detail for the next 5 hours if I wanted to, being a kid from New England, but I won't. I'll try to restrain myself here, but congrats to Tom Brady for finally retiring. I know many people are sad to see him go, like myself, but a lot of people are really happy.
Good riddance. Good riddance. Speaking of retirement news, we have some umpiring retirement news in the Cowboy Joe West. He retires with an all-time record, actually, in MLB games umpired with 5,460. So his official retirement after 45 years in the league, probably a little overdue, honestly. I know he's made some questionable calls in the past. So we'll get past those and just wish Joe a real good retirement.
Yeah, I saw a bunch of things on Twitter, but of like highlights, so to say, or like funny moments, like the stare down with Mad Bum. But one I haven't seen yet that I was the first thing that pops into my mind was when Nelson Cruz stopped the All-Star game to make Yadier Molina take a picture with him and then put his phone back in his pocket and continue to play. So just a funny thing to remember about. I remember about Joe West, at least. I know over 45 years, you make a lot of stories. So it'll be interesting to see what stories that have been previously unreleased due to him having a job will be released.
And honestly, one of the more generally liked umpires. I know everybody makes a bad call, and especially when it's an umpire that we like, we really get on him for a bad call. But I think that the Cowboys really been an institution in the MLB, and everybody generally likes him, at least from stories I've heard. So happy retirement, and just go kick your feet up on a beach and sing karaoke, because I saw a video last week of him doing it and he seemed to be having a really good time. So happy retirement, Joe West. And moving along from that, we have a little bit of medical news, actually, from my Baltimore Orioles. Now, Cedric Mullins actually revealed that he's been battling with Crohn's disease since 2020. And recently, doctors removed 4 to 6 inches of his intestines, so that he later developed an infection on, which caused him to lose 20 pounds before this past MLB season, and then had a 30 for 30 season and one of the best single seasons in really in Orioles history. If we really look into it, the 30 for 30 season is nothing to scoff at for sure. It was the best Oriole on the team this year. And it was just really incredible to hear about this and realize how well he did after battling with such a really deep and difficult issue for a lot of people. And Mullins in an interview said that, "I think it's more important for people to not be afraid to get checked out. That's something that I've always had a hard time doing. That tough guy mentality really gets in the way." And he's just imploring everybody to seek medical attention if they're experiencing symptoms. And it's just props to him for dealing with that and playing so well with it. And props to him for speaking out and being like, look, get help if you need help. It's not an issue to make sure you don't have any other issues. So just some quick stuff on that, because it's really impressive.
Yeah, Crohn's disease is nasty. I've seen it firsthand. So it's not something that you can, it's not something to mess around with. So good for him for using his platform to make sure to get awareness out there and to make sure you get checked out for it.
Now, speaking of getting checked out, MLB, the ESPN MLB guys need to get checked out for something going wrong, because they released their top 100 players of all time list, Matt. And you texted me as soon as it came out and said, this is awful. Correct. Because, I mean, looking at it, it is awful. We'll get into it a little bit in a second. But there are some questionable picks, I'd say. I mean, to start it off, I mean, we got guys like Bryce Harper above Hall of Famers like Jim Thome, Adrian Beltre, who will be a Hall of Famer. He's in the same Bryce Harper's at 94, and guys like Pudge Rodriguez are at 90. Ryan Sandberg, the Rhinos, at 91. Some of these just don't really add up.
Yeah, I have so many notes on it. But Bryce Harper, for me, when I first saw him at 94, I was like, that's way too high. And then I saw some names around him, and I was like, wow, he might actually be way too low. So I have no idea where I'd put Bryce Harper on this list.
But then there's other ones that are just, I mean, I'd say just really, really bad. I mean, one of the less bad ones that I think everybody's talking about is the Mike Trout position. He's at 15th on the list. And honestly, I think Mike Trout could be number one at the end of his career. But at this point, I think I would have to put him more in like the 20 to 25, maybe even up to 30 range, because guys like Albert Pujols are at 30. And Pujols has had a full career, whereas Mike Trout's only had maybe half of it at this point.
Yeah, I immediately thought Mike Trout was way too high. Putting him over names like, I mean, steroids or not, putting him over names Alex Rodriguez, Randy Johnson, Ricky Henderson, Cy Young, Mariano Rivera, like Bob Gibson, who's at 33, seems like I would not put Mike Trout over any of those guys just yet. I do, like Ezra said, I think he could be number one by the end of his career. But by the way, with the amount of injuries he's had lately, I don't know if I'd put him at 15.
Yeah, and then we come to the one that everybody's been talking about is really bad, and that is the number 28 selection on this list, and that is Mr. Overrated himself, Derek Jeter. Now, 28 seems a little, like it might seem reasonable, but then you look at the names directly after him and you start to question it a little bit. And then you look farther up the list and you start to question it a little bit more. I mean, Derek Jeter is directly behind Roberto Clemente.
And then he's in front of Johnny Bench, Albert Pujols, Mariano Rivera,
Sandy Koufax, Bob Gibson, like even Joe Morgan, Jackie Robinson are behind him.
Pete Rose, Nolan Ryan, Tony Quinn.
Ichiro's only at 46 there. And then you go up to the 60s. I have to go to the 60s to find Cal Ripken Jr., probably the best shortstop of all time. And Jeter is the number two shortstop on this list behind Honus Wagner. It's just ridiculous. You look at the numbers, and Cal is just, I mean, you look at the, not even the numbers, you look at the achievements. Cal has two MVPs as opposed to Jeter's none. Jeter has 14 All-Stars compared to Cal's 19, where they played only one difference in year. I mean, Jeter played 20 years, whereas Ripken played 21. The Jeter only had five Silver Sluggers compared to Ripken's eight. Ripken had two Major League Player of the Years, a Home Run Derby Championship, a Rookie of the Year, and two All-Star Game MVPs, as opposed to an All-Star Game MVP and a World Series MVP for Jeter. And I think it's become a consensus now that Jeter is not great defensively either. He does have five Gold Gloves, but the man had no range. The iconic Jeter throw that we all talk about nowadays is just because he didn't have the range to make that a routine play in his time. And it's just the fact that there's just about 40 places of difference between Jeter and Cal Ripken is absurd to me.
Yes, well, Jeter definitely should not be that high. I wouldn't even put him over Ernie Banks, who's ranked at 51. But for me, the biggest robbery on this list was Ken Griffey Jr. not being in the top 10 players of all time. I mean, the top 10 it's a pretty good list, but there's very definitely questionable decisions. Barry Bonds at 8 definitely is questionable. Babe Ruth at 1's questionable too. I put Willie Mays over him, even Hank Aaron, who are at 2 or 3.
I would definitely put Willie Mays number 1, Hank Aaron number 2. And honestly, one that I know you're going to agree with me here on is Mickey Mantle at 7 seems awfully low as well. I feel like Mickey Mantle should be top 5 at least, maybe even top 3.
For a guy who played through injuries his whole career, he put up over 500 home runs, hit around right around 300. I mean, triple crown winner, multiple World Series with 7 World Series, batting titles, 20-time All-Star, 3-time MVP. For a guy like a guy who battled through injuries his whole career, solid player, won the greatest of all time, not more than solid. Putting him at 7 also seems like a robbery.
Yeah, and then we can talk about this all day. I mean, there's so many names that are just in absurd spots. Like, you have Cal Ripken Jr. behind Max Scherzer. I'm going back to Cal, but Manny Ramirez at 68 seems awfully high. I feel like he should be in the high up the list. The number should be higher, is what I'm saying. I feel like 68, he should maybe be in the 80 range. I don't know, 68. I think Shulistro Jackson at 89 is a little ridiculous. He should have a better rating there. I mean, there's just so many just not good ratings here.
I mean, Carl Yastrzemski is way too low, 61. I mean, triple crown winner, like number retired in one of the biggest franchises in baseball. Putting him behind Miguel Cabrera, there's so many questionable things. Behind Miguel Cabrera, way behind Clayton Kershaw. It's
appalling, honestly. I mean, even there are also some guys that, if you look at it, like Adrian Beltre at 97, I would put him above a bunch of guys on this list. Just like Mike Piazza being at 81, I'd move him up a little bit. Rod Carew at 75 needs to be higher. Chipper Jones at 78 needs to be higher. There's definitely some pitching issues. They do not give the pitchers enough time of day here, especially with like Mo Rivera being at 31 when he is just literally the best pitcher, at least the best relief pitcher of all time at 31. And he's behind some guys that I wouldn't need, like Cy Young. I know he had like the awards named after him and all, but I don't know if I'd put him at 21 and have Mariano Rivera 10 spots behind him. It's just a lot to take in here.
Yeah, Bob Gibson at 33, the guy who quite literally changed the rules, like the reason why they changed the rules is unreal. I mean, there's definitely guys, one guy that like, he was a former Red Sox, but one guy I think is way too high is Tris Speaker. I mean, he played back in the early 1900s with the Red Sox, at least. I know he was an Indian for a little bit, Guardian for a little bit, but I don't think he's the all-time leader in doubles, but I also don't think he should be that high on the list. I think he was sitting around, he's around 36, putting him over names like Jackie Robinson, Yogi Berra, Jimmy Fox, Nolan Ryan. It's just some of these rankings are unbelievable.
I think also a real issue that I have is the Roger Clemens position at 17, I think is really high. I know that he was an amazing pitcher. I'm not going to dig him. I could never do any of the things he did, but I don't know if I could have him above Mike Schmidt, who's probably the best third baseman of all time, over Frank Robinson, who's a triple crown winner and one of the best player managers of all time. Ricky Henderson, the fastest man to ever touch the field. I would put Randy Johnson above him. Roberto Clemente, definitely. Johnny Bench, Pujols, Mo Rivera, Sandy Koufax, Bob Gibson, Pete Rose, all in a row. Joe Morgan, Jackie Robinson, Yogi Berra, I'd all put ahead of him. Even Nolan Ryan, I'd put ahead of Clemens. And I'm up into the 40s now. I'm 20, almost 30 spots behind where Roger Clemens is at 17. And this is just, the list is bad. And I don't really understand how a collective saw this list and was like, yes, this is the definitive top 100 players of all time list, because it's just not.
There's so many issues with this list. I mean, like we said, we could go on forever, but one last thing I like to point out is Rogers Hornsby is one of the best players of all time, if not the, and probably the best second baseman of all time.
And definitely up there.
How he's 20 is unbelievable. He needs to be at least top 15, in my opinion.
Yeah, and
especially with guys like Honus Wagner in front of him, I don't think that's great. I don't think Greg Maddux in front of him is great either. I put him over, let's see here, put him over Clemens. I put him over Robinson and Schmidt too.
There's
Rogers, Hornsby got robbed too.
There's a lot of issues, and that's why we're going to cut it off, because we could talk for hours on this, but we got other stuff that we got to talk about. And that being the biggest news in baseball right now, because there is no other news, the MLB The Show cover came out, and I think they messed up on the cover, you know, because I saw this tweet from Dexter Fowler in response to the MLB's Twitter asking who should be on the cover. And he had the best answer I've ever seen. He said, put the owners on there. They clearly want to be the center of attention. So let's throw them on the cover of the show and see how that goes. And I think that's the greatest answer. But no, for real, I think they made the right choice. I think it was obvious that Ohtani was going to be put on the cover. He's becoming the new face of baseball, and for good reason. We don't see guys do what he does every day. And it's well-deserved, especially after that MVP season. A little bit of news regarding just the game of the show. They're actually bringing it to the Nintendo Switch, which I found a little interesting. But the cover athlete, Matt, what are your thoughts on it?
So I agree that it should be Ohtani. He's the face of baseball by far right now, especially over, like, internationally. He is the face. One thing that when I first saw the original cover for, like, the standard editions, I thought it was a little boring, but most of the covers recently have been a little boring, so I wasn't too disappointed by it. But when they came out with the MVP edition, it is the coolest MLB The Show cover I've ever seen.
I think it's one of the coolest video game covers, period, that has ever come out. It's inspired by manga, and obviously it's an ode to Ohtani's being a Japanese man. I think they're really appealing to that, but it looks so good. He has a really, they're adding like the anime style flames to it. Ohtani has a bat in his belt, like it's a katana or something. And it just looks altogether amazing.
Yeah, I love the ball in one hand, like he's about to throw it as a pitcher, and a bat in the other. He got the fire on the bat and on his arm. It's one of the coolest covers I've ever seen.
Yeah, and it's just, there's so many little details on it. The detail they put into the jersey graphic, the detail they put into like the ripped vest type thing. I'm not really sure what it's called. And the Angels logo on it, and the fire, and all of the little things, really crappy pun, but they hit it out of the park with this one.
Yeah, no, it definitely insane. Definitely a lot of effort and work put into it, and I think it was a great cover. With the new cover coming out, we thought it would be fun to talk about the show rating. So we both picked 5 players that we thought would be interesting to guess their ratings going into the new year.
Yeah, so we're just going to do this based off of the live series Diamond Dynasty, because those are obviously the most accurate. We have the ratings from the end of the year last year, and we're just going to bounce off each other, ask each other what we think their rating will be coming into the new year, and see how that goes. So Matt, I'll hit you with my first one. And it's a guy that you love. You had to know I was going to ask you about it. Wander Franco, what's his show rating going to be in your eyes?
So last year, Wander Franco got up to, I believe, an 84, if I remember correctly. I think he's going to be a diamond to start the year. I think he's going to be a little higher. I have him around an 86. I think he has great contact, plus power, great fielding, switch hitter, which helps me. I don't know how much it helps his show rating, but it helps me want to use him. So I have him around an 86 overall.
Yeah, you were right. Last year it was an 84 to end the year. And honestly, I could see an 86. I think they might keep it an 84, at least from my perspective. I feel like we haven't seen too much of him in the league yet, so that's probably why they'll keep it a little lower. But I think by the end of the first month of the season, he'll be in the diamonds and maybe even like an 87, 88 range.
Yeah. Now, my first guy was a guy I wanted to use all year, but he was criminally underrated in live series. And that's Jazz Chisholm.
So little backstory on Jazz is in my sports communications class, our final was to just make an event centered around one rookie athlete. And our group, which consisted of a bunch of other guys on the Emerson baseball team, chose Jazz Chisholm because, oh my gosh, is he electric. Now, last year, he was criminally underrated when it came to ranking, to giving him the show rating. And I think that they're probably going to do that the same. I don't think that it's what he deserves. I think he should probably be around like a 79 to 80 in that gold range. But I think they'll probably give him like a 76 to 77 at the most. Because the thing about Jazz is he's flashy and he has sneaky pop, but he does strike out quite a bit. So I feel like they're going to plummet his vision and his discipline ratings because of it. And that's going to drop his rating to like a 76.
Yeah, last year he ended at a 74, so I could definitely see him around there. I also think he should be around the 77, 78 mark.
Yeah, but of course, it's the show. They never get it perfectly right, but they're normally pretty good about it. But on to my next one is another guy that we've mentioned on the podcast pretty recently, and that was in our episode on New Year's resolutions. Matt, you said the A's should sign Matt Olson to an extension. So what are you going to rate him in the show?
For me, I have him around a 90, I would say. I know it might be a little high compared to others, but he's got great fielding, great power. He doesn't, like, his batting average isn't great, but his OBP is up there, and he's still like a 260 hitter. He's just a complete player, especially at first base. You don't see a lot of that, especially with fielding. Usually it's guys who can't field a ground ball over there, but with him, he can do it all, pick, field, ground ball. So I have him around a 90.
Yeah, so last year, finished the season at an 89, just about the same as you said, Matt. You said 90, he was 89. And I could see it. I could also see them dropping him to like an 88. But I think that he'll probably just stick between that 88 to 90 range. And honestly, by the end of the year, I could see him being like a 93 or something, because I think he's going to have a breakout season this coming season, as long as the season gets underway, really.
Yeah, for sure. My next guy is going to be a Red Sox, one of my favorite players on, if not my favorite player right now on the team. And it's Rafael Devers.
So Rafa Devers, we mentioned him last week when we were talking about the best young cores, because he is still 24. Crazy to think about. I feel like he's been in the league for 100 years at this point. But I would probably say that he'll probably be around like an 87, I think, maybe a little lower, maybe like an 85. But I feel like they never do the Red Sox players justice, I feel like, in the show. So I feel like he'll probably be at an 85, even though he's probably deserving of an 87, 88, because he's one of the best third basemen in the league right now. Like you said, the switch hitting definitely does something, but we'll see if that does anything for the ratings in the show. But I definitely think that he should be in that mid to upper 80s, but I feel like he'll just be smack dab in the middle of the 80 range.
Yeah, he was an 86 last year, but his fielding has improved greatly since he was a rookie, which many people thought was going to be terrible, and his bat speaks for itself. So
yeah, for sure. Now, moving into my next one is a guy that really came onto the scene very strong at the end of last year after getting dealt at the deadline, and that's Starling Marte, a little bit of an older guy here. He's in his 30s now, but what do you think he'll be rated in the 22?
I got him around an 87, 88. He's had flashes of power, which if he can keep that up, he'll go higher. But he's definitely got the contact and the speed. He stole an insane amount of bases in a short amount of time when he was in Oakland. And I think if he can stay healthy, which seems to be an issue with the Mets recently, with their players staying healthy. But if he can do that and hit home runs and keep up his contact numbers and his steal numbers, I think he'll be around 88.
Yeah, so last year ended in an 86, and honestly, maybe still a little underrated. I think he's been around for a while, and he's been doing pretty much the same thing year in, year out. But last year, he really came burst onto the scene after getting dealt, and I could definitely see him being in that upper 80 range for sure.
So my next guy, I'd have to say Shane Bieber.
Oh, am I going to be a believer or not? The thing is, we know what he can do. It's just a matter of putting it all together, staying healthy. And with a rebuilding or revitalizing of that Guardians franchise, we'll see how that goes. I remember last year he ended around that mid-80 range, as a lot of guys end up doing when they have great seasons the year before and fall off a little bit the next year. So I think we'll probably see him around there, probably start at like an 86, I think. Because we know what he can do. It's just a matter of putting it all together for another season. So I'll say an 86.
Yeah, finished last year an 85. I think he's criminally underrated for having – he's a great pitcher, and he definitely, I think, gets taken down a little bit for having a not-so-great defense behind him. So.
Yeah, but we'll see how that goes. And honestly, I really love Shane Bieber, and I want to see him succeed. So we'll see – I think that by the end of the year next year, he could be back in the 90s for sure. Now, moving to my next one is another pitcher, but not a starter. I went with a reliever here, a guy who started off the season very, very well and then got dealt at the deadline to a contender and was inconsistent, to say the least, and that's Craig Kimbrel.
I'm going to have to put him around an 84. He did do really well last season to start off, but he lost the closing job when he got traded to the White Sox with Liam Hendricks having it. He's not as big as a part of the bullpen as he was with the Cubs, so he's going to have less games, especially with there being more arms in that White Sox bullpen. So I think I'm going to have to put him around an 84. I definitely think he could go up, but I definitely think he could go down too.
Yeah, so when I was at, this was actually when I was surprised by, because he ended the season at an 87. Which is pretty surprising to me considering the end of the year that he had. But I think that 84 is probably where he'll start next year. I think that's a pretty reasonable estimate.
So my next one is a guy who actually just recently won the World Series, and that's Dansby Swanson.
Yeah, so Dansby, despite being one of the most beautiful men in baseball, is, well, not despite, but, you know, just additionally to being one of the most beautiful men in baseball, Dansby is really coming to his own recently. He was the number one pick, got traded to the Braves from the Diamondbacks, and he came up and he was a little inconsistent at the plate. We always knew what he could do in the field. And last year really stepped into his own with the absence of Acuña to bring those Braves to a championship and to win the championship in the end. So I think that he'll probably be around like I'll say an 85 maybe. I think that the fact that they won the World Series will definitely bump him up a little bit, even if it's maybe undeserving. I think that in reality he'll probably be like an 82 if we just went on pure talent alone, but I think that because of the World Series, I think that an 85 rating is what he'll get. He'll definitely have diamond fielding and probably gold hitting, so that's why I think that he'll be boosted a little bit there.
Yeah, he ended last year at an 83. That was boosted a little bit because of the World Series and how deep he was able to play. But yeah, I'd have him around the 80 mark, I think.
Yeah, and then going into my last guy, another guy from the Braves, actually. The man who became a cult favorite in baseball circles, and that's Jorge Soler. Now, those were some tanks. So do you think they're going to take that into consideration?
I think he's going to stick around the 77, 78 mark. He has power, but not a lot of anything else. He's not a great fielder. He's not great at contact hitting, but when he gets into one, he gets into one. So I'd have him around a 77, 78 as a pure power hitter.
Yeah, so last year finished with a 76, and I totally agree with you. I think his power will go up. He will have probably 90 plus power against both sides off the bump next year, and that'll definitely boost his show rating. As I said, ended last year at a 76, maybe a little boosted by those World Series tanks that he hit, but definitely a guy to look out for, because he'll probably get a special objective card or something that has like 125 power against both sides off the bump.
Yeah, now for my last guy, I went with my favorite player in the MLB. Many people know I have a tattoo for his brand. And Ezra, what do you think Marcus Stroman's rating is going to be?
99. No, in reality, I think that it'll probably get a boost from last year. I don't remember if he ended at like an 82 or an 80. It was somewhere in that range. And I don't think he'll get a boost at the beginning of the season. The starter ratings, I don't think he'll get a boost there, but I think he'd definitely have a good season. Going to the Cubs, being probably their number two, I think that Kyle Hendricks will stick to that ace spot for them. But Stroman, I think, will probably be at 80, but he'll definitely bump up to around, I would say probably almost a diamond, but we'll see how that goes. But he's one of my favorite pitchers to watch. He's so fun and he's so gosh darn good. So I'm really excited to see how his season goes, much less how his MLB The Show rating goes.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, I'm going to be biased here because he's my favorite player in the league. But I thought last year he was well-deserving of a diamond, and he ended at an 80 and barely at gold. So,
yeah, and like we've said, the show ratings have never been perfect. So we'll see how close we were to being correct. I doubt that we will be on the mark for most of them. But that brings us to the end of our show segment. And that brings us to our show's segment, and that is the Mount Rushmores. Now, this week, we have, again, two pretty young franchises. We have, first, the San Diego Padres. Now, there are some obvious ones here that do we really need to go into depth about? I mean, Tony Gwynn's got to be on there, Hall of Famer, 15 All-Stars, 5 Gold Gloves, which I didn't actually know. But he won the batting title 8 times in his career, 7 Silver Sluggers, spent all 20 years of his career in San Diego with the Padres. I mean, there were years where he hit 370. He hit 394 in 1994. The fact that he never won an MVP is really just a product of him being on the Padres for his whole career, I think. Because, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. One of the greatest pure hitters of all time, finished his career with over 3,100 hits, only 135 home runs, but a career average of .338 and played 20 years. That's incredibly impressive. An OPS plus of 1.32 and an OPS of .847, a career WAR of over 69. Like, the man is one of the best hitters to all parts of the ballpark we've ever seen and probably will ever see.
Yeah, he's pretty much the all-time leader in every hitting category in Padres history. Like Ezra said, 20 years, San Diego Hall of Famer, and career .338 batting average, over 3,000 hits and 300 stolen bases, just an all-around player and had to be on there.
Oh, for sure. And going to the next guy who also definitely had to be on there for me was the closer himself. Probably the second best relief pitcher of all time, and that's Trevor Hoffman, recently inducted into the Hall of Fame. Did not spend his entire career with San Diego, but he spent 16 of his 18 years there. Only had 7 All-Star appearances, but was reliever of the year twice, and he had some incredible seasons out of the pen, and it was really easy for me to decide to put Hoff on there. I mean, his numbers retired, the 51 will sit there in Petco Park forever. And that's why it was really easy for me to put Trevor Hoffman in there.
Yeah, in his 16 years in San Diego, he almost won Cy Young twice, finishing runner-up both times. He almost won an MVP as a closer, finishing 7th. 601 career saves, .287 ERA, all-time leader for the Padres in WAR as a pitcher, ERA, WHIP, K per 9, games played, and saves. He is one of the best players in Padres history.
Yeah, and something that I found out in doing my research was that he's actually 8th all-time in games played in Padres history as a relief pitcher, which was really impressive to me. It just shows that, A, it's, you know, maybe not the oldest of franchises, but that he was given the opportunity because he was good enough to have that opportunity so often that as a relief pitcher, he is top 10 in appearances in among those position players that would play 150-plus games a year. So moving into the next guy is a guy who I was reluctant to put on my my Rushmore, honestly. But then you look at the stats that he had with the Padres and you got to give it to him. And that is a Cy Young winner, which I also didn't remember, with the Padres. Only played 8 years out of his 15, but that was the most he played with any team. He's in the he's third all time in WAR for the Padres. And that's Jake Peavy. Now, he actually won the pitching triple crown with the Padres. He had the he won two ERA titles with them, led the MLB in strikeouts in 2007 with them with 240. His fielding independent pitching that year also led the MLB. His whip was just barely over one, winning the Cy Young that year, and was seventh in MVP voting. I was reluctant to put him on because I saw Jake Peavy. I'm like, there's no way I can put Jake Peavy. But then I looked at the numbers and I had to put Jake Peavy.
So Jake Peavy was one of the first names I actually thought of. But yeah, two-time All-Star, Cy Young, MVP 7, all-time leader in strikeouts for the Padres, even though he only pitched 8 years there. It's amazing to say the least. But yeah, Jake Peavy was one of the first names I thought of when I saw the Padres.
Yeah, and so moving into the last name, I'm pretty sure, Matt, that we're probably going to have the same exact top four on our Rushmore, and that's Dave Winfield. If there's a category that isn't topped off by Tony Gwynn, I'm pretty sure it's topped off by Dave Winfield in Padres history. He's second all-time in WAR. He's a Hall of Famer, 12 All-Stars in his career, 7 Gold Gloves and 6 Silver Sluggers. He did only play 8 of his 22 years, but he was a bit of a journeyman after his time with the Padres and the Yankees. His best years probably did come with the Padres, where he one time led the league in RBIs. His OPS plus in that same year, 1979, was 166 and led the league in total bases with 333 and was walked intentionally 24 times that year. And that was a pretty consistent sight. I mean, he was a 20 plus home run guy. He was 20 plus stolen base guy. He was hitting 280 to 300 for the most part in his career. And it was pretty simple for me to put him on the Rushmore as well.
Yeah, he is also my last guy. Hall of Famer, 14-time All-Star in total. 8 years in San Diego, 2 Gold Gloves, and he finished 3rd in MVP voting. Just had to be on there.
Yeah, and the cherry on top is definitely the number being retired. And that brings us to our honorable mention, which might actually be different. Now, this is because this for me was simple. I knew he wasn't going to be on the Rushmore because the numbers don't really back him like that. But just like a lot of guys that me and Matt put on our honorable mention spot, it's the first guy I think of when I think of the Padres, watching the Padres when I was younger, and that's Chase Headley. Now, he only won a Gold Glove once. He only won a Silver Slugger once. No other awards to his name. With the Padres, spent 9 of 12 years in the league with them. And I mean, he was the Padre for a while. He was their third baseman. And I wouldn't be surprised to see his number retired at some point by the Padres. He even came back to the Padres in his last season to retire with them. 115 RBIs in 2012. He was never the biggest RBI guy. That was easily his career high, but he was just a consistent hitter, 263 in his career, 1,300 hits, and is top 10 in WAR, I believe top 12 in WAR, sorry. And he's just a Padre through and through, and that's why I had him as my honorable mention.
So my last guy, my honorable mention, you can double check me. I'm not even 100% sure if he was on the top for WAR. But I'm going with Randy Jones. It's a name I actually hadn't even heard of before I did my research. He had 8 years in San Diego in which he won a Cy Young, an ERA title, and a two-time All-Star. But as I was going through Padres history, his name just kept popping up as the all-time leader in walks per nine, games started, complete games, shutouts, innings pitched. So he's an all-time player for the Padres. So I had to put him on as my honorable mention.
Yeah, and to your point, he finished his career 8th all-time in WAR for the Padres, just a few spots ahead of my guy, Chase Headley. So makes sense to have both of these guys, really. Obviously, the honorable mentions aren't Rushmore guys, but, you know, definitely deserve their due time. Now, jumping over to the American League for our next Mount Rushmore is the young guns in Tampa Bay. Oh, Tampa Bay in quotes because they play in St. Petersburg, but that's a different story. They've only been in the MLB for 24 seasons now, so there's not a ton to choose from. There's an all-time top 12 players in WAR instead of 24, just like a lot of these young franchises. So, Matt, I'll let you take it away with the guy that I'm pretty sure we both have.
Yeah, the first name I thought of, I mean, I have so many funny stories about him. I used to always see him at Fenway, and it's Evan Longoria. He has 10 years with the Rays, won a Rookie of the Year, 3 Gold Gloves, and a Silver Slugger, so he can play on both sides of the ball. He's the Rays' all-time leader in WAR, and he leads them all-time in at-bats, plate appearances, games, runs, total bases, doubles, homers, RBIs, walks, pretty much every major hitting stat.
Yeah, Longo obviously had to be there for me. He was a huge part of those mid-2000s, early 2010s runs to the postseason for the Rays. And it was pretty cut and dry when we decided that we were going to do a Rays one, that Longo had to be there.
So my next name is one of Longo's teammates in Carl Crawford. 9 years in Tampa, 4-time All-Star, Gold Glove, and Silver Slugger. Finished 7th in MVP voting 1 year. But all those stats that Longoria doesn't lead in, Crawford does, an all-time leader in batting average, hits, triples, stolen bases, and singles.
Yeah, so obviously Carl Crawford also on my Rushmore. Like you said, not enough can be said. He was a guy that in my DS version of MLB 2K11 or whatever it was, I hated playing against because he just hit the ball and then he stole every base and was the death of me for years. He's second all time, right, in WAR for the Rays, and it was pretty easy to decide to put him up there on the list.
My third guy is one of the most dominant pitchers on a single team, and it's David Price. He's the all-time leader in WAR for pitchers, and ERA, WHIP, and FIP. So all the stats that just shows just how dominant you were. In his 7 years in Tampa, he was a 4-time All-Star, won a Cy Young, and was a Cy Young runner-up. So I had to throw him in there for Tampa.
Another easy guy for me to put on there. 7 of his 13 years came in Tampa Bay. And honestly, maybe not his best, you know, cumulative stats. Because if you look at it, I mean, in his 2 years in Detroit, he had a 2.90 ERA as opposed to his 3.18 in Tampa. And with Toronto, he had a 2.30 in the 1 year he spent with them, as opposed to the Tampa ERA, but he did it over 7 years. You can't keep a 2.30 ERA over 7 years. And it's so easy to put David Price on there. Another guy that you think of the Rays and you think of a guy on the bump, it's gotta be David Price.
Yep. And my last guy on the Rushmore is the pitcher that has all the counting up stats and the all-time leader in wins, walks per nine, games started, complete games, shutouts, innings pitched, strikeouts, bat and batters faced, and that's James Shields.
Yeah, so James Shields is not a guy that I included, and we'll get to that. We'll get to the other guys that I included, but definitely was in my consideration. So I was definitely thinking about it, but I think there's a couple of guys here that I had to give my last spot on the Rushmore to and my honorable mention to also. And speaking of, my last name on the Rushmore is sticking with a theme of the past few episodes, is I don't have a player as my fourth guy on the Rushmore. I have a manager. Of course, it's going to be Joe Maddon. Obviously, he has a World Series title to his name, but not with the Rays. But he brought the Rays an AL pennant in 2008. He's the winningest manager of all time. He's you see him in a Rays hat and it looks right. He was very, very important to those playoff runs that they had. He had 90 win seasons in 2008, 2010, 2011, 12, and 13. And it was easy for me to put him here because he's one of the most fun managers that we've seen. And definitely a guy that I was like, okay, gotta get him on there.
Yeah, and for my honorable mention, I wanted to put a guy of the recent Rays, the ones that have been dominating the AL East the last few years. And I wanted originally to go with Brandon Lau, but he didn't seem right to be on the Rays from Mount Rushmore. I really badly wanted to put Wander Franco, as we all know how much I love him, but he only has played 50 games there. I could have put Blake Snell, but once again, I just didn't feel right. So I ended up going with Randy Arozarena. He won a Rookie of the Year last year. He's an ALCS MVP. He had a 2020 season last year with 20 home runs and 20 stolen bases. But he was really put on the map and really put the Rays on the map in his 2020 postseason heroics with 10 home runs and one postseason, and how he has 11 homers in 24 Rays postseason games. So just the postseason heroics, I had to put Randy Arozarena on my Mount Rushmore, or as my honorable mention.
Yeah, and so with my honorable mention, I did not go with a current guy. I went with Placata himself, Carlos Peña. Now, again, another guy who's been a bit of a journeyman, but in a Rays Mount Rushmore, you can put journeyman on there because they haven't really had enough history to have guys that didn't play for multiple other teams. Now, Peña in his only played 5 years with the Rays, but that's five out of his 14, and it's the most he spent with a single team. He was not the best average hitter in his time, only hitting 230, but his on-base percentage was 360. He got walked 460 times in his 5 years there. He was almost getting walked. He was getting walked all over the place. He was hitting bombs all over the place, 163 in those 5 years, which is easily his most with any team. He has 163 home runs with the Rays and only 286 in his career. He was a guy that I was looking into it, and I was just like, who do I put here? Who I was between a few guys, BJ Upton being one of them. James Shields was another guy that I thought of. I even thought of like Zobrist for sure was on my mind, but I settled on Carlos Peña. He had definitely his best seasons with Tampa Bay, was finished ninth in MVP voting in back-to-back years, won a Silver Slugger and Gold Glove in years in Tampa, had his only All-Star appearance with the Rays. And another guy who I just remember growing up and seeing the Rays, and it was just, he always seemed to be doing something really good for them. And that's why I'm putting him as my honorable mention for the Tampa Bay Devil and now just Rays. And with that, we placata it off to the end of the episode. And again, guys, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for staying tuned and interacting with the social medias at Armbarn Pod on Instagram and Twitter. Stay safe with all this COVID shenanigans, and let's just hope and pray that we get the end of this lockout soon.
Yeah, once again, thank you for listening. Like Ezra said, follow at Armbarn Pod on Twitter and Instagram, and stay safe and have a good one.